Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, and I am joined by my buddy, David Ungar, and we are here to welcome you into Hockey Talk. Hockey Talk is part of the ChairShot Radio Network here on TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
And it is here. The Stanley Cup Finals are upon us as we record this. Game one in the books. Florida over Edmonton, 3-0. Fascinating game of series. We are going to get all into that today. Before we do that, though, Dave, just how the heck are you, man? We are under a time crunch recording today. It's going to be very exciting.
We kind of did all of our off-air conversations and lost track of time, but I'm doing pretty well. Glad the finals are here. Enjoyed game one. It's going to be an interesting series.
Yeah, I we'll get into that in a second. You know, we do have quite a little show. We are going to talk about the finals in the first segment of the show today before we go to commercial break. We come back from commercial break. We're going to talk about a couple of things. I'm talking really fast.
I know. I was like,
hate myself a little bit.
Pat's like on 1.5 speed.
I'm amped. I am amped up because, like you said, game one was great. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was very intriguing to watch to see how it was going to break down. But no, the other big stuff that we're going to talk about in the second half of the show, we got a little bit of fun things to talk about as we have got the final six possible mascot / team names for the Salt Lake City Hockey Club that will be coming to us soon, as well as an ESPN 30 for 30 that I don't know if you were able to get around to watching, but I think you didn't need to enable in order to have this conversation. But ESPN released what I thought was a very interestingly timed 30 for 30 as a Canadian team tries to break the 30-plus year curse of no cup in Canada by dropping a documentary called I'm Here for the Riot, which was about the infamous 2011 Vancouver riots in the wake of Vancouver losing the Game 7 Stanley Cup Final to the Boston fucking Bruins, man. You know, what I got out of that documentary is that Boston ruins everything and causes riots. Does Boston fucking sucks. Yeah, that's what I got.
But Boston and New York, I think they've got equal opportunity assholes. Eh,
yeah, your feelings about the Rangers notwithstanding, right there with you. But none of that is relevant yet, because what we are going to do first, we're going to talk about not just game one of the Stanley Cup Finals, which we'll break that game down itself, because I think it was a fascinating microcosm in that there were two periods that were distinctly Edmonton and a period that was distinctly Florida. And Florida won out in a way that you kind of wonder how they won out. And that was really cool. But before we get into that, the dogs would like to say hello, because they're excited. They're excited for the finals too.
They're excited, and I get that. About like, the finals. Yeah, they absolutely
they're are. They're excited. Feel those nipples. You see, Tony, I know you're listening. He so is. That was
He's listening.
So here's what I thought was really, really interesting about this, because I actually see a pretty big parallel between the NBA finals between Dallas and Boston and the Stanley Cup finals between Florida and Edmonton, in that you have two teams in each of these series that is predicated on their stars carrying. And then you have two teams that are just, they're deep. They're not as talented at the top, tippy top, but they're deep. And that's not to say that neither team doesn't have their stars. That is not what I'm saying at all. But what I am saying is that Florida clearly had a strategy. And I think Boston has this too. Boston was a little bit different. Boston was, we're going to let Jokic get his, because nobody else is going to. And Kyrie, they nullified Kyrie Irving, and that was that in game one. And it was never a game. To me, it was clear, and I think this is the plan going forward until proven otherwise, that Florida has determined somebody other than Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are going to beat them if they're going to beat them. And you especially saw that in the way they defended the power play and the way they made Edmonton distinctly uncomfortable in that game. And it was crazy, because for two periods, if there was no score for it, like they didn't have the little score bug up and you are just watching the game and how the two teams are performing, you would sit there and say, well, this the team in Edmonton, the white team and blue team, they're gonna be up like four goals. They're gonna be up a ton. And yet, when you put the score bug up and it's 2-0 after two on like 10 shots on goal, like 12 maybe or after the second period, because, and they were getting outshot by like 20. Yeah, it was just crazy. But what I think is really important to pay attention to is who was shooting those shots for Edmonton, and Bobrovsky having the best game of his playoffs this year. Like second shutout to open a series. So I guess you could argue that the conference finals game one was right there with it, but he was amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And then the puck luck, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I got all these things. I'm just trying to spit them out. The puck luck involved for Florida was unbelievable. There was a play where Bobrovsky goes down and there is nothing to stop a shot, and Draisaitl can't get a good stick on it and shoots way wide of the goal. It was nuts. But Bobrovsky was phenomenal yesterday.
Yeah, he stole game one. He stole it against the, well, I say it against the Rangers, but Florida outplayed New York, and this was the first game
for two periods.
Yeah,
I'm going to argue this for two periods, because third period Florida played their game.
They did, and I think, you know, I'm so used to seeing Florida just impose their will, and maybe it's a difference in the styles of the Rangers versus Edmonton. And Edmonton, you know, to their credit, you know, like you're saying, Florida wanted to take away McDavid and Draisaitl, and Edmonton was more than willing to play this game with them. It's like, okay, we're going to get these guys out here, especially in the third period where they put them on the same line.
They put them on the same line. Yeah.
And Florida was smart to counter that, because Barkov is going to be the one who's going to be responsible to try to nullify that. But Bobrovsky made big saves. Florida got some opportune goals, where Skinner wasn't, I don't know. He played pretty well, but he wasn't under a lot of, he played better in the third period.
Those two goals, he was hung out to dry a little bit by his teammates too. And that's the other thing is Edmonton skill wise, they were putting pressure on Bobrovsky and the Florida defense, and Bobrovsky and the defense held. But when Edmonton made a mistake, Florida made them pay both times. And I'm gonna ask you this, because I understand why in the third period we changed the line and did the nuclear option of McDavid and Draisaitl on the same line. I don't think that's a good move. I don't think that's a good decision at all, because of what you sacrifice with every other line. Because I don't think it was that, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it was really that the lines were ineffective, because they were knocking on the door. It just felt like a matter of time. And you could just see it. Like they couldn't do it. And then they were worn out. Like, you're just worn out. Uh-oh. It's time to go scold the dogs.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. So I was just saying, I just don't know, like, I don't know that that was the effective way to handle that. You know what I mean?
It sends the wrong message. It's like hitting the panic button in game one. And I don't think you want to do
right.
that. And they were, yeah, I mean, they were getting good looks. They were getting good shots. Bobrovsky made some ridiculous saves. McDavid had a really good scoring opportunity. Draisaitl had some, like you said, yes. Things went wrong. Evan Bouchard was the only reliable other option that Edmonton seemed to have, and he was firing the puck pretty well. But yeah, I think, like you're saying, when you move those guys around and you put your two biggest stars on the same line, I agree with you. Edmonton does not have the depth that Florida does. And, you know, Florida can throw four lines at you and create all sorts of problems for you. And Edmonton's probably got three really good lines, and the fourth one is a little bit iffy sort of thing. But
right.
I just, you know, if I'm Edmonton and I'm out of game one, I come out of there thinking I feel pretty good. Yeah, we got beat 3-0. The score doesn't look good. We got shut out, but we had lots of chances. It's the first time that Florida's been, they've won a game where they were outshot. It's very rare for Florida to be outshot in the playoffs at all. Now, if there's a concern for Edmonton, it's that third period and the way Florida just really put their foot on the throat
impose
and said, we are not
their will.
And if they do that consistently, that's going to be a problem, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing to watch the switch flip. And, you know, Edmonton, first two periods, 12 shots on goal, 13 shots on goal on like 50 shots too. Like, it wasn't just the shots on goal, 7 shots on goal in the third period. Florida just kind of maintained and did what they needed to do. And it was just, they were very disruptive and they wore Edmonton out. Like, Edmonton was just, you could tell that they were gassed. And I don't think they did themselves any favors at all with that line switch.
Yeah.
Like you said, and the power play for Edmonton, I don't know how they didn't score on a couple of them, because they kept one of the shifts. They kept the Panthers line. They kept them on the ice for like damn near a minute and 15 seconds. Like, they were on there forever, and they were moving the puck back and forth, and they just couldn't punch it home. Yeah. And if that continues, I agree with you. Edmonton is too good on the power play to allow them to have as many chances. They had 10 minutes. They had five. They got to kill, which credit again to Florida. You killed 5 penalties,
but
10 minutes of power play time.
And you can't rely on, you know, because that dam's going to
break. No, not at all.
Now, if you're Florida, you compare this to last year, and Bobrovsky gave up like 12 goals in the first two games in Vegas. Here it's like, okay, a shutout's a much better start. And it's the first time in their history that Florida has ever led in a Stanley Cup Finals. It's like their third time.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I'm looking at it, and I don't know, I mean, it really depends. I think the first period of game two is going to be really interesting to see, what do we get? Do we get the same thing like Edmonton, just, you know, skating up and down, kind of Florida doing this counterpunching thing? Or does Florida push back and try to get more offense right off the bat in game two? Because I think if game two goes the way that game one does, then we're going back to Edmonton tied. That's going to be my guess.
The first two periods go.
Right.
Here's the thing is, I'm taking way more stock in how that game ended as opposed to how it started. This actually shades of the Eastern Conference Finals and cracking Igor Shesterkin. Once you cracked Igor Shesterkin and scored on him, it changed the way Florida went after it. If Bobrovsky continues to play in goal the way he played in game one, and Edmonton continues to struggle, that, like, they got to break that dam. No. And the chances were there. And I do worry that if that dam breaks, that could pose problems for Florida.
Here's the big problem is, like you're saying, and I'll jump on with you, that third period. Did Florida take the first two periods to figure out how Edmonton plays and then said, okay, we got it figured out now. Here's what we're going to do in the third period. Because if that's the case, Edmonton's got big problems. Because then Florida say, okay, here's right. how we're going to do this. Here's how we can flip the switch on this whole thing. Edmonton does not. They've played really well. I don't know defensively how, whether they're any, you know, going to be good as a counterpunching sort of team as opposed to the up-tempo, flying up and down the ice, relying on your skill players to do all that sort of thing. So that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, the first period of game two is going to really tell a lot about, okay, what did these two teams learn in game one? Because, I mean, a lot of times, we've seen it in the finals lots of times, what happens in game one does not necessarily translate into the entire series because these teams aren't very familiar with each other. So I think, you know, like the Caps lost game one to Vegas. I think the Blues lost game one to Boston. So
they sure did.
It takes some of these teams a bit to figure this sort of thing out. You know, what did Florida learn from game one? What did Edmonton learn from game one? It's like, you know, I'm a big proponent of volume shooting, you know, put as many pucks as possible on the net. And Edmonton certainly did that. So maybe in game two, they start to focus, let's make an extra pass, let's get some extra quality, which I'm usually not a big supporter of. But when you do what they did in game one and it doesn't work, it's like, okay, maybe we need to look for some different angles, some different setups, get some people in some different places, throw something at Florida that they didn't see in game one, get Barkov. I think, like, you know, when they get to Edmonton, they can control the lines a little bit better and get last change. That'll give them some help, but yeah, as long as Barkov is shadowing McDavid and Draisaitl, that's the matchup to watch, really.
Right. All right. Well, we'll have to see how this goes and how it unfolds. We will probably still have the series going by next week. I don't anticipate a sweep, but you never know. Next game is on Monday, so there will be two games in the books by the time this episode drops. All right, we got to go to our first commercial, our only commercial break. We come back, Utah has announced its six finalists for the names of its NHL franchise.
Is the polygamous one? It's probably not.
It is not, but we will talk about those on the other side of the break. Stay tuned as Dave and I give our opinions on that and the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary, I'm Just Here for the Ride. You are listening to Hockey Talk here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Thank you. right, welcome back, everyone. I'm excited. Dave's excited. The dogs are excited.
I don't know what they're excited about, but
they are excited to talk about ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries and Utah hockey team names. Chairshot Radio, chairshot.com. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot and invest in a Chairshot shirt for all of your swag needs. Represent the brand. Only $19.99 for a shirt. Spend a few dollars more. You know, Father's Day is coming up, and probably some sort of code like Father's Day might be a promotional code that you would come across. Maybe score you a little bit of extra dollars off that beautiful Chairshot shirt. Okay, we are running out of time very, very quickly here, Dave. Let's get right to it. I want to start. So I get up Saturday morning, flip on the old DirecTV, and I'm looking through the recording list. And I just have ESPN 30 for 30s automatically record no matter what they are. I'm like, new episode only. When ESPN drops one, I get it and I'll take a look. Now, I open up my to-do list to watch it, and there's no description as to what this 30 for 30 is. So I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. I press play. And it immediately cuts to footage of Vancouver playing Boston. And it starts talking about 2011 and one of the saddest moments in the history of the city of Vancouver, in which thousands upon thousands of people who've been gathered outside around the streets of Vancouver to watch and hopefully celebrate a Game 7 Stanley Cup victory fall apart very, very quickly. Boston handled Vancouver. The game was never really in doubt. And the crowds turned from nervous excitement and anticipation to surly and angry and eventually into a full-on riot with thousands upon thousands of dollars of property damage, cars flipped, fires burning. It was one of the grossest incidents in sports, you know, violence that's been recorded in history. And it was one of the more unique points in history because it also was one of the first riots to be captured and shared on social media in such a way that had kind of been unheard of up until that time, and resulted in multiple people being arrested and, later publicly shamed. And this documentary was really, really interesting in my opinion. Like, I watched it, showed footage of the riot. It's really hard footage to watch. I'm getting soft in my old age because, like, I was very emotional just watching the absolute worst. And I have worked on a college campus and have seen this behavior on the campus where I worked as well. In more than one occasion, both when the University of Massachusetts has lost major sporting events, they made national news when the football team lost the FCS national championship before they moved up a level and did all kinds of property damage. Anytime the Patriots or Red Sox would play in a World Series or a Super Bowl, we had to prepare. I've seen police in riot gear walking through and dispersing crowds. It's not a pretty picture, and it's crazy. One of the things that was really interesting about this documentary is it talks about how this thing sort of builds upon itself, and that it's not just as simple, as much as we would like to say, as people kind of quote unquote being stupid or getting caught up in a mob mentality, that there really is some subtlety and science to it all as to how something builds like that and gets out of control, from the city's response, you know, with its police force, to folks just thinking there was no accountability or responsibility to it all, to the social media impact, to people who may not have even had anything to do with it. They were just there. But got photographed in such a way that it looks like they were doing more. And so I just thought it was a really, really interesting documentary and was very much worth a watch. And as you mentioned, in 94, the same thing happened.
Right.
But we didn't see it in quite the same way because it wasn't reported in quite the same way.
I caught parts of it and then I had to go and do something else. So I do know what you're talking about because I was like, oh, this is interesting. I think... from the standpoint of the 94 riots and the fact that this city didn't learn anything from that, it really didn't. And the kind of the police mentality was like, oh, that wouldn't happen again. People aren't going to do that again. And it happened again. And it happened even worse because, like you're saying, the whole world saw it in 2011 because it's all over social media. People got put into really awkward situations. Lots of people's lives were really damaged, if not downright ruined, by being in the wrong place at the wrong time, sort of sentimentality and situation. So, yeah, from the standpoint of just looking at, like, Vancouver, what's your problem that you just had this belief that, oh, that's not – wait, you lost Game 7 in 94, the city fell apart. Why didn't you think this would be any different when people were at – nobody expected you to win in 94. The fact that you got the Rangers to a Game 7 was damn near miraculous. But here, this city was really poised to celebrate their first ever Stanley Cup, and it didn't work out. So, yeah, the fact that they went down this – ugly downward spiral into oblivion is very sad, and it is fascinating to look at the psychology of because we see this. I mean, I didn't see, and you know, even when I was on the West Coast after I moved out here, if any city should have rioted several times, it should have been Washington after the Capitals shit the bed so many times, but they just didn't. It's like the mentality for like that city is just kind of like, I don't know, complacency, but just morbid acceptance. You know, we accept that we suck, and we're just going to take it.
Yeah.
And Vancouver
wasn't
there.
Well, to me, it also speaks to Canada.
Yeah.
And not like Canada, and just how much this really does mean to folks. And whether you want to talk, like, because I don't buy, like, there was, they had one of the reporters who covered the 94 riots, and they talk about how when Vancouver's in the final, like, there was all this media coverage about, like, hopefully, you know, this shouldn't be a repeat. And he was like, do I believe that people, like, saw that footage and were like, oh, well, if we lose, we have to riot? He's like, I don't buy that. And to the point, that was 20 years ago. Like a lot of the people that were there were toddlers when it happened. So it's not, I didn't really buy that. But what I do think is really, really interesting is once it happened, it doesn't matter how many police officers, like, it's out of their control, and there's really not much they can do until they start firing into crowds. And you don't want to do that, because anytime you reach that sort of boiling point, that's kind of it. And the police then become the villains. What I think is really interesting was kind of the latter part of the documentary is really focuses in on about four people who were identified via social media, were arrested, and how that drastically changed their lives. Mm-hmm. How one guy, he was like a professional mountain biker, and he talked about it. He's like, in 36 hours, I had lost everything was gone. And he was like, I was wearing a shirt for Oakley. I wasn't even sponsored by Oakley. I wasn't getting paid by Oakley. And Oakley's business took, I guess, hundreds and thousands of emails and letters from people decrying them for sponsoring me. I wasn't even sponsored by them. I just had a shirt.
Good way to get sued by Oakley too, for damage to their reputation, completely inadvertently.
And so it's really interesting, because I do think that what these people talk about is also the other part of this. And that's the world of internet shaming. And we see this a lot, and that these people, like, but the people that were interviewed for this doc, so, you know, obviously this isn't exhaustive, but they had regrets. They were remorseful for what they did. They know what they did was wrong. They say that. And they talk about how hard it was to pick up their life and move on, and how it's still hard, you know, 13 years later, 12 years later, to just live your life. And so it's a really good documentary, everybody. I strongly recommend you check it out if you have, you know, the ESPN streaming service, because they put all those up on the streaming service in their package there. It'll be airing on ESPN because it's a new 30 for 30, so they'll air it a ton right now. And if that's something that floats your boat, you should definitely check it out. Okay, last but not least, it was announced this week that we have six finalists. More than 520,000 fans voted online from a selection of 20 names, and we are down to six. And these six accounted for approximately 60% of the total vote of possible names for the Utah hockey team that is coming, the former Arizona Coyotes. Dave, we don't have too long to go into this, but your final six are the Utah Blizzard, Utah Hockey Club, Utah Mammoth, Utah Outlaws, Utah Venom, and the Utah Yeti. Before we give any reactions, I do want to say I appreciate that they went with the Utah blah, 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 blahs, not the Salt Lake City, because some of that doesn't make sense. Like the Salt Lake City Venom doesn't quite ring the same way the Utah Venom do. And so gotta tell you, this is an interesting group of six. Of these six, because we're going to get into another phase of voting. You have until June 20th to make your voice heard for the fine people of Utah and their Mormon brethren. Your six choices are in front of you. Which one kind of rings your bell a little bit? What are you going to vote for?
Oh, man. PC Tunney's here. So he should get involved in this as well.
He's not on this show. He's not here yet. he's invisible.
The Utah Blizzard, I kind of like that. The Utah Yetis isn't so bad. The Outlaws, okay. The other ones, I don't want, no. Utah Hockey Club, you're not fucking football. This is not soccer. This is not, I'm as fond as I was of the Washington football team, we don't need that. But, the Venom, I don't know.
Venom, okay. The Utah Venom only works if you get a co-sponsorship from Sony and Marvel. And Venom, the character, becomes the mascot. Can you imagine if we get like a Las Vegas Knights style opening with like a Venom projection on the ice, like bursting through? By the way, kids, if you have not Vegas's pregame show, it's something else. You got to check it out. But doing something like that, if it's just some stupid fucking snake, like, no thanks. But for me, I put me on Team Utah Yeti. I like the idea of a Yeti. And then that's an easy mascot. Dude in a big furry white suit skating around. It's going to be great. It can't be any worse than Gritty. Which, by the way, can we just – sorry, as I get distracted. How did Gritty really take off the way that he – that thing's the stuff of nightmares.
If they go with the Yeti, I don't want to see – I want to see like a more – like the Yeti from Matterhorn, Disneyland. Their ride out there, just kind of like a menacing – sort of Yeti. Tunney's coming up with names that don't really count.
Stop. He's not on the show. Oh, okay. Why are you doing this? Pay no attention. This is why. My fault.
Pay no attention to that fool behind the curtain.
So kids, since Dave keeps pulling the curtain back, we record Bandwagon Nerds right after we record Hockey Talk. Pat had to eat lunch today. And so we started late. And so now suddenly Dave is distracted. He's like the shiny object in the corner of the call. He's like, what's going on over here?
He's got a dry erase board, Pat. It's kind of hard to ignore.
It's true. He is coming up with Utah team names that have not made the final six.
The polygamists were already excluded, Tony. Don't.
So what are we endorsing then, Dave? What are you endorsing? I'm endorsing the Yeti. Give me the Utah Yeti. I'm behind that.
I wouldn't mind the Yeti. I think I like the Blizzard, but that's just me.
All right. So Dave likes weather phenomena. I like mythical creatures in the snow caps of the north. And that, my friend, is going to do it for us on this week's edition of Hockey Talk. Before we get out of here, and before Tunney distracts you again, tell everybody where they can find you out there on the social medias and on the Chair Shot Radio Network.
You can find me on X at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, facebook.com/attitudeofaggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. Don't ever give PC Tunney a dry erase board, kids. It's just a bad idea.
And you can follow me on the X Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. You can always catch me on Monday and Tuesday. Those are reliable when it comes to Patrick O'Dowd on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Allegedly, I do Wednesdays every, 6 weeks. Once every 6 weeks, I do the Greg DeMarco show with Greg DeMarco. This week was my fault. I was busy on a week, a little getaway with the Mrs. O'Dowd. It was nice. We earned it. And so this one's on me. I am available to record this coming Tuesday. We shall see who is available on the Greg DeMarco side. But that has nothing to do with this show. You've been listening to Hockey Talk. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back next week to see where the series stands. Hopefully, it's still going. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. Right now, it feels like a Florida and six sort of situation after that first game. I know Dave disagrees with me. That third period, man, I'm telling you, you got to watch out. That was a dominating effort. So we'll see where we are. We'll be here to talk about it. We also got the NHL draft coming up soon. That's happening in Vegas towards the end of the month. So still a lot to go for hockey before we switch over to musical chairs. And we will be here to cover it every step of the way. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been Hockey Talk here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.